Looking at our agenda, we either have a very long morning or a very short day, depending on your point of view, I guess. Our first issue is, IAS 1 and 12. And Kenichi, is this your first time? Okay, standard IASB rules say that we have to be nice to Kenichi on his first time, which I guess we'll define as paper 8. You can be mean to him on paper 9. Go ahead.
Good morning. Today I'd like to present two issues that are related to the same tax regime proposed in jurisdiction. The first issue is whether the production-based royalties paid to one taxation authorities that can be claimed as allowance against income taxes to the central government should be presented as operating expense or production cost or tax expense in the statement of comprehensive income. This issue is discussed in Agenda Paper 8 and Agenda Paper 8A. And Agenda Paper 9 and Agenda Paper 9A are discussing whether entities should recognize deferred tax assets upon the substantial enactment of the new tax legislation for the market value uplifts on mining assets that will be allowed under the tax legislation. But first, I'd like to start with the issue of the presentation of royalty payments in Agenda Paper 8 and Agenda Paper 8A. As the basis for this discussion, the submitter assumes that royalty payments to local taxation authorities are outside the scope of IS 12, while income taxes payable to central government is income tax under IS 12. And please note that as stated in paragraph 3 of Agenda Paper 8, there was another submission received at the end of February. The staff were planning to address this submission after this meeting together with other comments to be received from constituents. And going back to the issue, proponents of Bill 2 consider that the royalty payments can be considered to be prepayment of income taxes to the central government. They focus on the fact that royalty payments result in a 100% tax reduction of income taxes to the central government, and any unused portion of the royalty in one period can be carried forward to the next tax year. In addition, they note that the plural term taxation authorities are used in the definition of taxable income under IS 12. They think that this plural term means that which taxation authorities the taxes are payable to is not relevant, and the use of plural term further supports their view. However, we think that IS 1 intends to require an entity to present IS 12 income taxes in the line item of tax expense, and the plural term is not relevant once the royalty is determined outside the scope of IS 12, because that plural term is just part of the definition of IS 12. And in addition, we think that the tax treatment of some expense does not affect the accounting for the expense. Having said that, it is not appropriate to consider that royalty payments to the consider that royalty payments to be prepayment of income taxes. And when it comes to the divergence in practice, as indicated in Agenda Paper 8A, we don't think that there is diversity in practice for the presentation of non-income taxes. So we think that committee should not add this issue onto its agenda. Do you agree with the staff recommendation? And if so, do you agree with the proposed rejection vote in Appendix A to Agenda Paper 8A?
The official name for that at the IASB is a Tatsumi. We had a board member who, at least every third board meeting, spill water all over the place. For those of you listening in Radio Land, we've had a technical difficulty here involving a water attempting to short circuit the system. So. Shall we resume?
So do you agree?
I had a question before I open the floor. Are these payments assessed in situations in which these levies assessed in situations in which the government does not own the mineral rights, or is it only when the government owns the mineral rights? It has nothing to do with the mineral. Okay. Because where I come from, it was very common in parts of the United States, the government owns 95% of all the mineral rights. And so, okay. Philippe?
So if the government doesn't own the right, what is the reason for the royalties, so-called royalties? Because usually royalties are paid in an exchange transaction with someone who grants the right to use or to extract the mine. Here, it's more like a tax. It's really...
If I could explain it, I mean, the issue comes from the Australian jurisdiction. And the MRRT was introduced as a sovereign wealth tax to try to tax the mining companies during the mining boom, to try to build up a store of sovereign wealth for the future, basically. That's the reason behind it. And what the government didn't want to do was to double tax these companies. So it said, to the extent that you are already paying royalties on your production in other areas, we won't tax you again, which is why they've said you can gross up the royalty and claim it as a tax deduction. So the objective behind this setting off of the royalties, if you like, the objective of it is to make sure that companies are not taxed twice on the same production. That's the rationale behind it.
I do understand the offsetting system to avoid double taxation. What I was questioning, asking for, is why the first tax is called a royalty. Whereas it doesn't seem to meet the definition of a royalty where you pay to the owner, to someone who is giving you a right. So if the government doesn't have the mining rights, in the first instance, it's kind of an income tax or revenue tax or sales tax, whatever, production tax, but it's the term royalty doesn't seem to be very appropriate for the first.
I think they're all different sorts of taxes. Maybe they're called royalties when in reality they aren't royalties, but they are different sorts of fees. They're taxes on production.
MRRT stands for, if I read this correctly,
Minerals Resource Rent Tax, right? The royalty actually isn't in the name.
Yeah. Okay. But the other royalties...
Yes. No, I understand.
The other tax is called the royalty, which is on production.
Right.
Whether or not the mineral right is owned by the government or by the entity, they need to pay a tax on their production. So the objective is to make sure they don't pay twice. And these royalties have been in place for a long, long time and have been accounted for predominantly as operating expenses. And so that's why I was going to say that I agree with the staff paper. I have some comments on the agenda decision, but I think the analysis is accurate, and I think it reflects the economic reality of what's actually happening.
Luca?
Yes, I agree with the staff analysis and with the conclusion of the agenda paper. It's a little bit different from other kinds, but the rationale underlining is quite common also in other sectors, also in oil and gas industries. So you have some way in which the government wants to take some level of revenues linked with your production, avoiding that you are double taxes on the same element. But I agree that it's not an income taxes, and therefore it's more a cost.
It does seem like, and Fei Long, I'd be interested in your thoughts on this. It does seem like what we used to call way back when an ad valorem tax, ad valorem on value tax. Fei Long, is this something that you encounter regularly?
I think that is the staff analysis is fine to me, and we generally regard it as operating expense in other taxes item.
Joanna?
Just to say, I agree with the staff analysis again. I've got some comments on the agenda decision, but staff analysis, I think, is absolutely spot on from the discussions that I've certainly had with people in Australia as to how it operates.
We seem to be in raging agreement so far. Guido?
I would also agree with what the staff says in the paper. There's only one question that I would like to raise, because I didn't understand, maybe I misunderstood the fact pattern. When I looked into 8A, I understand there are two other jurisdictions that say that have similar tax regimes, and I guess that the staff draw the conclusion there is no diversity in practice because both jurisdictions said that's not income tax, it's operating expense. Now, I realize that in their situations, these royalties or whatever it is are deductible from taxable profit, which does not lead to 100% tax reduction for the amount. That's for both jurisdictions. Is my understanding correct that in the fact pattern presented, it's different? It's not deductible from taxable income, but it's deducted from the tax payable. And you know, that may lead some people out there saying, well, that's a different fact pattern, because in this case, 100% deductible, we have actually the income tax payable, and you can deduct a certain amount from this income tax payable. So I was wondering, I understand that you came to the conclusion there's no diversity in practice when it's deductible from taxable income, but this is a different fact pattern here. So I was just wondering, I agree with the result that you have, but did you consider this difference?
Yes. Yeah, the fact pattern is a bit different because under MRT, the payment is grossed up and it's deductible in the calculation of the taxable profit. So the calculation profit process is similar because it's deduct both in all cases payments are deductible in the process of the calculation of the taxable profit. But under MRT, the payment is grossed up by the tax rate levied by the central government, so that ends up with 100% tax deduction. But in the cases received from the constituents, the deduction is the product of the payment, the amount payment multiplied by the tax rate. So it's not 100% tax reduction. But the thing is, the in all cases, the payment is determined based on the gross amount. So that's the key. So that's not income tax under S-TERP. So that's why we thought these both cases are relevant, similar cases, and we can refer to those cases in our discussion.
Yeah. So you're right, Guido, they're not the same. They were the closest of the information that we received back, but I don't think that negates the conclusion that we drew that we couldn't see diversity in practice. Okay, Guido, I should come back, and then Ruth.
Yeah, just a short, I mean, I could understand that people say that if I have 100 income tax to pay, and the royalty part is deducted from this 100, it's just 20.
It isn't. It's probably.
That was my question. That was my understanding, that it's deducted from the income tax payable.
No, it's not. It's not.
If you look at then we have... Okay, then.
Page 20 of 25.
It's deducted from the profit for MRRT purposes.
Yeah, but on page 14 it says something different. That's maybe like the fact
that... What happened is the tax payment is grossed up.
And then that amount is deducted. The effect is the same, though, as what you said, as if the amount paid is deducted from taxes payable, but it's handled through a different calculation.
So if you're deducting expenses from the taxable income, I think it's intuitively you'd say it's not income tax. But if you have a different situation as the one I described right now, people would say that, well, it's kind of a prepayment. It's deducted from the income tax payable. It's not deducted from taxable income. So I can understand that people see it a little bit differently. Now, after what you have said, I agree with what's in this paper.
Okay, I'm seeing general agreement, but people said they had comments on the agenda decision wording. Can we move to that? Andrew, did you want to come in? I'm sorry.
Ask a question, really. I was fine with the analysis, and I realise the second submission came in at the end of February, but the paper says, and I think the rejection wording is around the STAS analysis in the paper, and in the paper it says, due to time constraints, we haven't considered the issues in the second paper. Does that mean you're going to do that at a later stage, or you're going to wrap that up in this rejection notice? It's just a process question, really.
Yeah.
Well, I the arguments are slight. The arguments between the two are slightly different. I mean, they're not on all.
Yeah. We'd need to take a look in a bit more detail at the late submission. We haven't had time to analyse it properly for discussion at this meeting.
So that would suggest maybe we should not finalise an agenda rejection until we've had the opportunity to do that.
We can do that.
So I don't have it's just a process question, really.
Joanna?
I agree with that there should only be one rejection notice, but I'm thinking about the timing of it.
Yeah.
It would be unfortunate if we had to wait till May before actually putting out a rejection notice because we haven't considered the second one. Is it possible that you can look at the second one and we can tweak the rejection notice to effectively include both submissions?
What we could do is we could put this out as a draft, a tentative, as we would normally do, and consider this late submission as comment on and its impact on that tentative agenda decision. Now, one of the things that we will be talking about later is the consequences of the discussions with the board the other week on agenda decisions. And one of the things that the board agreed to was to extend the comment period from 30 days to 60 days. So this would not be coming back in any case until the July meeting.
Wayne, just in terms of the comments that I had, they're mainly drafting things, and I have actually sent an email through to Kenichi and Michael, so I won't make any further comment at the moment on that, but I think there do need to be some tweaks.
Guido?
I'd like to ask this staff another question. Is there might be a situation, as I understand, that the royalty payment is higher than the income tax payment, and then companies would, that's in the paper, recognize a receivable. So debit, receivable, credit, what is it, tax?
They carry it forward. They're allowed to carry it forward. They carry it forward to deduct in the future.
In the text that says that they would recognize a receivable for it. Page 15, first paragraph. Asset at year end.
Sorry, which paragraph?
Page 15 in an agenda paper 8. Yeah, it would be an asset at year end. So my understanding is it is an asset then, right?
My understanding is that that's not the way it works, is that you're then allowed to carry the royalty deduction forward to deduct against future MRRT.
So they don't recognize it in the royalty? Okay.
No. Because in my discussions with people about this, because I had a lot of outreach on this particular issue to try and understand it, I asked that question as well. I said, what happens if the royalty is higher? And they said the regime provides for you to just carry it forward. You don't recognize an asset for it. You carry it forward to deduct it in future years, but you don't recognize anything.
So it's like a loss carry forward?
Yeah.
Is it then a deferred tax asset?
I was going to say, well, why not?
If it's
an unlimited carry forward, why wouldn't, I guess I'm thinking on the same line Guido is, why wouldn't you recognize it as a prepayment? Joanna?
And I think the answer is the regime, the MRRT regime, does not say you can recognize it. But yes, using your normal common sense accounting, saying I've made a royalty payment and I don't expect to make any yet next year or something, but my MRRT will be higher, do I have an asset or not? You would look and say, do I have an asset in relation to that royalty payment? And sometimes you would say you do if you are able to carry it forward and use it.
So
because
it
it's got future economic benefit.
Deferred tax asset.
Well, no, it wouldn't, because the royalty payment, remember, is not treated as tax.
So that doesn't matter. It's a temporary difference that you have.
Right, wasn't it?
The asset is in relation to...
You can deduct something in your tax statement that you cannot... Deferred tax asset. That was not the question asked, so I think...
I'm not sure it's a temporary difference. I think it's a difference in current tax, which still would result in a debit or receivable. So, yeah, it'd be similar to a loss carry forward with no deferred tax implications. Okay, can we move to the rejection wording, which it appears I do not have on my iPad, so I'll have to share Michael's. Joanna, you said your comments were primarily editorial. Ruth, you said you had some comments, and I think Laurence.
Just an overall comment. I think it would be good to highlight in the agenda decision what I think is one of the key parts of your rationale, which is that many items are deductible against taxable profit in arriving at the amount of tax that you pay. But that doesn't make them a prepayment or an amount related to income tax. And I found that quite persuasive, I must say, there are many items that we deduct from taxable profit, but that doesn't cause us to say, well, then they must be treated as income tax. So, I was looking for that wording in the agenda decision, and maybe I've missed it, but I couldn't see it there. So I thought that was a key argument that should go in.
Lawrence, and then Scott.
Along the same line, I was thinking that the paragraph 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the fifth paragraph in the proposed agenda rejection was not actually reflecting the reasoning or was creating confusion, particularly with the sentence accordingly. The allowance of a non-income tax as a deduction against the amounts payable for an income tax does not change the nature of the former tax. It remains a non-tax, non-income tax. There are some links that are missing in that paragraph to explain the reasoning that Ruth has just explained. In addition, for the purposes of this agenda rejection, I was questioning whether you need the second paragraph, because you have laid out the fact pattern that we have been describing, which is a general one, in the first paragraph. So why do we need the second paragraph? What does the second paragraph add to the first paragraph for this rejection? I understand that that second paragraph may be of use for the other agenda rejection, but for the purpose of this agenda rejection, I didn't see what it was adding to the rejection. And I, coming back to that fifth paragraph, one suggestion would have been to remind the IS-12 definition of income tax to say that it is calculated on the net amount and so on, possibly. But anyway, I let you figure out with all those comments better drafting.
Ruth? And then, well, no, I think Scott was in next, and then Ruth.
I just had a response to Laurence. I think it is important to say that the MRRT is within scope of IS-12. So I'm not sure if you wanted to take that out, but I think it's important to say it is considered to be an income tax within IS-12 and then go on from then. Because if we don't say that, people will say, well, is the MRRT an income tax or not? I think it would be confusing for them.
Then I think that the in addressing whether the royalty payments are income tax or operating expense. The paper has not been addressing the question whether MRRT are.
No, but that's what I'm thinking. It should just say it is a given that the MRRT is within 12, is given. That's not what we were asking about.
Right.
And then we move on from there.
Scott?
I was just going to say I like the agenda decision, and I note that it is longer and more descriptive than tentative agenda decisions we've typically seen in the past, and I like it that way.
Do we need the very last paragraph, which is that we don't expect diversity in practice to emerge? Seems kind of self-serving to me. We've described the issue. We've said what we thought. It seems to me that this language is a throwback to the old agenda criteria, and it really isn't necessary for us to say it.
So, Wayne?
Andrew?
Well, I think before we made that call, I think we probably ought to have a wider discussion on agenda decision wording, because I understand, well, without jumping ahead, I understand the problems with the answer sufficiently clear, not expecting diversity, it's not those words. So rather than just delete it on this one on an ad hoc basis, I think we probably need a wider discussion on that.
Joanna?
I'm actually to remove it, and one of the suggestions that I had in that last bit was on the basis of the above, the committee noted that IFRS has sufficient guidance on this issue. And I think, I mean, I'd left the other bit in, but I actually think that we can put a full stop there and then say, consequently, the committee decided not to add this to agenda to remove the diversity bit. But I do take what Andrew has to say in terms of that general discussion first. But I would be happy to remove it.
Sarah, and then Charlotte.
And I'm fine if the committee wants to remove the sentences about we don't expect diversity in practice, but I do think it's important that the last sentence says what we decided to do, which is consequently we decided not to add to the agenda. I think that that you need to kind of finish the agenda yeah. decision with what the decision is. And maybe that one sentence stands alone.
Charlotte, you wanted to get in?
Yeah, I had a question on paragraph 3, where the submitter raised a question about using paying to plural taxation authorities. And then we actually haven't answered that question. We've answered, we said actually that's, I think what we're saying is that's not relevant here, this is the question. But do we need to answer that, or are we sort of leaving it hanging? And if it was income tax payable to two tax authorities, do we need to respond then, what you would do?
I didn't see, to be honest, the use of the plural term taxation authorities to be particularly relevant here. So I would be inclined to suggest we revise that paragraph and take that out. But just on Sarah's point, I agree we should make sure it's clear what the conclusion is, but also the basis for that conclusion. So why are we proposing not to do anything with it?
Guido?
I had the same problem as Charlotte, because I think that was one of the main arguments that were used in the submission, that you have this plural in paragraph 5 of IS 12, which, by the way, doesn't say that the payments are made to taxation authorities, but that the basis for calculating the tax can be given by tax authorities. So I would rather like to have that in and say, well, it's not about whether you make it something that you can deduct from taxable income in order to calculate your income tax, whether this payment is made to a third party, to a private party, to a government, to a taxation authority, doesn't really matter. So I would rather like to have that in, because that my understanding was that this is one of the main arguments.
Yeah.
That
I'm and then refuse it. Kind of yeah,
yeah.
And
yeah.
Why
yeah.
Okay, with those kinds of changes, which you'll all have an opportunity to see, and pending discussion on how we articulate the last sentence for the last paragraph, do I see any objections?